You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 33 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I'm your host, the Zach Matthews Carolina Crates Podcast. So I'm joined by Nate Moore, call sign Chatter.
What's up?
Dion Morales, who Chris could not say was his favorite D, apparently.
Oh.
And Chris, look at me. I'm the nickname now, Alan.
Hi. Ian-ish.
Thank you for that, Zach.
Beautiful.
I'm a helper.
That was great. I mean, I thought I'd make everybody like really concerned for the first like 30 seconds and see what happens. See who panics. All right, boys. So the plan for today is to do three things, and that's to analyze the North American Championship meta, take a look at Wave 12 spoilers, and we're giving away guns for hire.
Oh, can I have it?
No. Well, actually, that's not true, Chris, because since you are a patron, you actually could win the raffle.
I'm in.
You know what, boys? Let's just do it right away. Yeah? So, what do you think? Chris, now or later?
Oh, we got to do it now because I want to pick the number and then I want it to be me and then I want the whole system to be rigged.
All right. So, before we pick the number, I have to do a special thank you to Gabriel Taylor and Mark Tippett. Both of them were able to get me a copy each of Guns for Hire, one's for myself and one's to give away today. Right. So. I did the numbers and the calculations, and everybody gets their X number of tickets, depending on what level of Patreon they're on. And basically, Chris, what I want you to do is I want you to pick a number 1 through 1,326.
Oh, man, that's a lot of choices.
I got a number ready.
Zach, what do you got?
I'd pick Zach's number.
512.
That's 512. A very square number.
Yep.
All right, let's see. Scrolling.
The runtime for Whom the Bell Tolls.
Wow.
Is it in order of when you signed up for the Patreon? Or?
No, so what I did, I took everybody's name, and I put I randomized the Excel sheet.
Did I win? Am I the best?
You are not the best. You are the worst. Oh. No, that's Gordon. Sorry, Gordon, you didn't win either. So the winner is Michael Lepchinski. Lepchinski. From,
change your Chris Allen quick.
From Keller, Texas. Congratulations, sir. So, but here's a catch, guys. You actually have to have listened to the episode to win this raffle. So I'm not gonna reach out to you. You have 1 week from when this posts to get back to me. If not, we're gonna give it away on the next episode.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, so let's talk about Gen Con, North American Championships. We have our list juggler link, so you got all the lists there. So before we go on, one thing that Zach and Chris, you guys have talked about on your cast. By the way, I guess we should probably talk about this. If you haven't listened to the Carolina Crate podcast, they're another really good X-Wing podcast, very different style than
not family friendly.
It's entertaining to say,
but
the
it
least.
Is it can be entertaining, and yeah, so if take a listen, if you like it, great. If you don't, that's okay, it's fine. Do what you want. But one thing you guys have been talking about lately is agency, and Chris, could you explain to me what is agency?
Yeah, so agency is our short-term slang for control in the game, getting kind of out of control. So it's sad Marcel's not here because one of the first things that tipped us off was when you play like three jump masters with Intel Agent, you look at all of your opponent's dial and then all your ships move first. So you can effectively move their ships for them. You can say, okay, that ship's going to move this far. I want its arc to point this way, et cetera, right? Like you can... And then you can park that jump master in front of them, and then no matter what's on their dial, you can continuously block them forever. So, like agency is it's kind of like how much input you have on the game that is actually meaningful. Like, because if you're putting your dial down and the jump master is looking at it and says, "I don't care what's on your dial, you're blocked," because I can block your entire dial, then you don't have any agency because you don't have any input on the actual game state. You're like spectating your opponent play a single player game, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It came up on our, I think, episode before last. I tried to do a quick explanation of it as we were kind of in the middle of a discussion, and it just wasn't clicking. So I think that was a great explanation. Thank you for that. So from these lists, out of the top 16, how many would you say take away your agency?
Can I do the shorter list and say the ones that don't?
Sure.
So, Nathaniel, your list was pretty wholesome. Ray Miranda, right? There's no intel agent. I mean, bomblet generators says you can't go here, but you always can't go there. It's not like a surprise. Leander's, kind of. He was playing Kanan Lorik. If it were Biggs, it would have been a massive agency burglar. But Kanan Lorik lets you make the mistake of shooting Lorik instead of Kanan. Pro tip, shoot Kanan. Paul Black was playing, what, Nora Jess Lorik?
His list was sneaky, like, because I played him, and it certainly gave you an illusion of agency, but if you were making the wrong choice, your choices were irrelevant. There was a right choice and irrelevant choices.
So there was a correct choice, so your input matters. So, you know, we'll give that not an agency burglar, gold star. So Tom's list is playing exactly what I was, or I mean, slightly different upgrades. The Fairship Rebels, no agency burgling there. Zach,
minimal agency burgling. I mean, there Biggs was there.
Yeah, Miranda with advanced slam bombs. Andrew's list, maximum agency burgling. There's no escape. Palab, Nim, Mindlink, Nim. Now there's an interesting question. I don't think that's agency burgling.
No, he's good, but also very wholesome. I played that game. It's fun and wholesome.
Yeah.
Like playing in the rocks.
Yep. There's me, same list as Tom, more or less. There's a Jacob with Quick Draw Rack, and Kylo is a massive control piece that's gotten kind of out of control. So we'll label him a burglar of agency. Double TLT cruise missile. No, that's just awesome. Nim Miranda, Andrew, you're a massive burglar. Budget. just with an ultra, so no burgling there, just somehow snuck through with like an old outdated list. And then Paul, burgling agency. So basically every other list and every list that pretty much made it to the top eight was ignoring the opponent's input on the game. Pretty much all of us with fair lists got knocked out of the top 16. Nate, you made it to top eight, right?
Yeah, I made top eight. I was like fifth or something.
So here's a debate I have for you. So some people would look at the Fairship Rebel build, right? Your four ship rebels with Lorik, Jess, Rex, and Biggs, and say, well, I don't have input on that game either.
I'm probably being overly generous when I say we're not taking people's agency, because Biggs is the ultimate control piece in X-Wing. He says you don't get to choose what happens in the combat phase. You have to you have to shoot Biggs. But your positioning matters a lot, and you can, for instance, I lost a game in Swiss where my opponent killed Lorik. Never had Biggs in arc, which was impressive.
Absolutely.
Like, his input there mattered a lot. You know, he actually got to play. But if you don't really know how to play against Biggs, then you don't. And Biggs is just as bad as anything else, if not worse. But the real difference between, you know, what we call these things that are taking away your agency are like Advanced Slam Miranda, where if Miranda's in front of you, I don't care what Reddit will try to convince you of. If you have a K-Wing in front of you with a lower pilot skill than you, you are eating a bomb and there's no escape. It's just going to happen. The same thing's true for Nim with advanced sensors. You don't even need engine upgrade, but bonus points if you've got it. Where basically, once you get close enough to this ship, it will do this thing to you. And the only thing you can do to avoid it is never get within like range 4 of those ships.
Right. And then to kind of build on top of that is one of the things I'm noticing, especially with people who debate some of these ideas that that you don't have choices against these ships, is that it also comes down to player skill level and realization that they can take away the opponent's agency. Because we did see, you know, just looking at across the tables, there was Nim everywhere. It was ridiculous how much Nim there was. But there was a lot of, not to be rude, but there was a lot of really bad Nim play.
Yeah, Nim was my worst matchup in the tournament, and I played it 8 out of 10 games.
Oh, wow.
I walked by you round 1, and you were playing a Nim, and I was like, this is going to be a rough day for Chris. And then I went to the hall and came back, and you were 3-0. And first I was like, crates on top, but then I was like, how did you get out of that Nim game? And you were like, hold my beer, watch me do it again.
I did some quick mental math. It's about 8 of the lists were not like advanced sensor Nim or Biggs style lists where you're, you know, controlling your opponent. There's some about 8 of them are like what we'd call fair lists, if that makes sense, like getting by on your jousting value or getting by on like ace play or getting by on just like the strength of turrets type things.
So that's going to transition us into who won, Zach?
Nathan Idy.
For people who don't know, who is Nathan Idy?
He is was the perpetual bridesmaid. He took second at Worlds in 2015. He was the back-to-back Wisconsin regional champion. Paul Heavers knocked him out of the cut or knocked him out of Gen Con a couple times. Paul beat him at Worlds in 2015 when he took second at Worlds. He was the runner-up at Hoth. And I feel like there was another event he took second at that I'm forgetting.
Alrighty, so what did he fly?
Corin Nim. So he had push limit, engine upgrade, advanced sensors, R2-D2 on Corin. So basically there's two ways to run Corin that he feels are correct, and it's just advanced sensors or fire control. Locally, we're not big believers in PS10 Corin. And then he had Nim with bomblet generator, the title, TLT, VI, advanced sensors, genius, and engine upgrade.
And he had like a 4-point bid, didn't he?
It was 4 or 6 points. I think it was, the sheet says 4, so yeah. It was 4 points because his Corin was worth 53 points.
Yeah, it was a very, very aggressive bid.
Yeah. He and I talk, I mean, we slap notes a lot. He wanted at least a 2-point bid. And the only other, like, the only 2-point card he really could have fit in there that would have made any sense at all was seismic torpedoes, which doesn't really help him because, you know, he's got the ace and the maneuverable ships, so the obstacles benefit him. So at that point, he just said, yeah, I'll go up to 4 points.
Yep, and 4 points means his second ship, like if he loses a ship, his other ship is worth 4 points more. So, I mean, that mattered in your game, right, Nate? Like
his... Yeah, no, it definitely did. His Corin was worth, like, I don't know, 50. It was worth way more than my Miranda. And then when I got to that point against, like, Miranda versus Corin Horn, I'm like, this is going to be very terrible. And it was.
Yeah, contrary to what Twitch chat thinks, unless Miranda has advanced slam bombs, she can't kill Corin.
No, she cannot, because what's going to happen is Corin's just going to regenerate turn. Miranda's going to regen, but you forget that Corin can actually put damage through Miranda. He's throwing 3, 4 range 1 if he wants to do that. I mean, he attacked me from range 3 and did at least 6 damage to me about 2 times. So, in one turn. And that was, there was no way I was really going to be able to do anything. And he is not a dumb player. He's very, very calculated. He knows exactly what you're going to do and he knows how to avoid it and get his shot. So, there's just no way I can avoid losing its Nathan.
Now, one thing, you know, having been the caster for the North American Championships, you know, it's really interesting to see people's thoughts in the Twitch chat. And I love watching Nathan play because like Nate Moore said, he is very calculating. Every move matters. And it's great to see two players really try to outposition each other and try to get an advantage on each other. But a lot of people get impatient with that. They want to see two people just fly straight at each other, roll dice, and see what happens. But, you know,
that's how you determine who's the better player, whoever is better at rolling those dice. You bring the best jousting list, and you just YOLO into people. It's
fine. Yeah, I think people clapped when a ship was taken off the board. And I think it was D who talked about this before. Like, people clapped at good rolls at one of the first worlds. And people were like, well, clap at good moves. And, like, yes, people clapped when... my big stat, I'm like, okay, so you guys are going to clap for that, but you're not going to clap for what he did to get in that position? Like, I think I just called the crowd out.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what I said, but I was very snarky at that point in the night.
And well-deserved. You know, it's, you know, definitely people play this game for different reasons. Some it's because they just like Star Wars. Some it's because they like the competitive scene. But understanding that at a tournament and you're watching a tournament stream, these players want to win the game. The reason why you were there, especially if you're at the top table. So it's going to be a little bit different than what you see maybe at League Night or when you're playing, you know, in the basement, just kind of rolling the dice.
I don't know how I would have felt had I won that. It would have been awkward going back to the game store because I love Nate, but everybody really loves Nate. I did not want to be the monster. In the back of my mind, I'm like, how prepared am I to be the monster that keeps him at the bridesmaid table?
Right. When you shot that the concussion missile, right?
Yep, it was concussion missile. I just checked List Juggler. It's still listed as a cruise missile. It was concussion missile.
Yeah, I was like, oh, baby, this could be it right here.
Well, in our game, I actually got him, our Swiss game, I got a Corrin off the range one focus target lock shot with four dice.
Yep.
So, like, I was feeling pretty good at that moment because Lorik was ready to follow up, and it didn't happen.
And for anybody who's wondering, we actually did catch, I think it's about 10 minutes of that game of Swiss on our stream as a bonus game, and it's uploaded on YouTube. So take a look at that. You can do some comparisons between the Swiss game and the final game, which is actually in the middle of our recording uploading right now.
So that game came on the stream after I had already killed Corrin, and I was basically doing really crazy stuff with Biggs to make sure that he couldn't do anything really crazy while Miranda just wore him down. I think I put Biggs on a rock because I wanted him as close to Miranda as possible so that Miranda could TLT Nim, and there was no way Nim could get a shot on Miranda without having to shoot Biggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great move. That was a great move. I remember that.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at that game that I won, you'll note that Corrin was dead. So I kind of knew in that final game what I had to do to win that.
So now here's a question, right? A lot of people look at List Juggler, they follow the big tournaments, and usually right after, what do you see on the table? You see that winning list all over the place. We have upcoming in 2 weeks, we have the Nova Open, which is the U.S. Nationals for X-Wing. Are we going to see a bunch of Corrin Horn everywhere?
I hope so.
I was going to say, if you're going there, you would sure hope so.
He will go down in a burning, fiery inferno if you overextend, if you play him poorly, if you get him in any terrible kind of position. So with all these other people thinking, oh, Corrin Horn, is this my way to win? And I don't really have to think anything. Well, that's exactly what you want to happen because they're definitely going to overcompensate and fall apart at Nationals.
Yeah, I joke about it a lot that if I saw Nathan's list 9 rounds in a row at a tournament he was at, I could duplicate my Gen Con results 100% of the time.
Yeah, I'll choose my words very carefully here. Corrin Horn requires you to be very patient and run until you get yourself into a favorable position.
I had always said bide your time. You know, one thing, like, Nathan's my friend and I'm very protective of him. Because he's quiet and I'm outspoken, so I take care of that. But a couple of people were like, oh yeah, you know, he kills something and then runs to time. I know all his games in Swiss went to completion. He killed 100 points in every single game in Swiss. I know not all his games in the cut did. But he is a fairly aggressive player and plays to win the game.
Wasn't like, that's fine. Killing something and running the game to time is like a real strategy.
Mm-hmm. But I just don't, I see people saying that and it's inaccurate.
But I do love watching people that don't play really expensive aces that die if you screw up once, play really expensive aces that die if you screw up once, because it all ends in a horrible dumpster fire. It's fantastic.
So, and then I want to take this a little further, right? X-Wing is a game. Now, I know that everybody who plays X-Wing maybe doesn't necessarily is a fan of sports, but I really like football. At baseball, I prefer it, but if you compare it to football, right, and same thing with soccer and basketball, like, there is a timer in the game, and you have to make conscious decisions dependent on the timer. One of the things I was listening to your guys' cast about Gen Con, and you said that Nathan Idy kept asking how much time we have left because it informs your decision. And I guess one of the judges said something that was really not smart. What was the quote?
He said, you know, how much time left in the round shouldn't change how you play.
Right.
What he meant was it shouldn't change how fast you play, like how quickly you make your decisions.
You do have to use the clock to your advantage and be cognizant of it when you're making your decisions, because that can totally change your decision making. One thing I remember, I was talking to Paul while I was there, and I guess they had reported the end time of a round wrong on that second day and said, oh, we'll just give the time that we said, not what we wrote down. or excuse me, what the time we wrote down, not what we said, and it was 5 minutes longer. And Paul says, well, that'd be really awkward if you thought it was X time and you did that, like a move towards the board edge. And they said, oh, no, it's you still have 5 minutes left to play.
Yeah, that'd be really unfortunate.
Yeah.
I would not be happy.
Yeah.
Using the clock as a resource is kind of, I don't want people to go out and go, oh, Dio just told everybody to slow play.
I didn't say that.
that's absolutely not what you said. But yeah, like
here, I'll cut you off, Chris. The amount of time left in the round is just as important of a piece of tactical information as where the rocks are.
Yep. Or how much health is left on ships or where ships are on the board.
Well, no, this is actually like an interesting thing because my girlfriend kept on asking people, what is the appropriate amount of time per dial to set and everything? Because a lot of people try to call her on time and she doesn't really take a long time, but maybe because it's a girl, she's like, they expect her to move faster. I don't give her less leniency. But she was asking people just in general, how much time do you think you're allowed to think about a move per dial? And some people said about 2 minutes. Some people said three, depending on the situation.
Man, 2 minutes per dial? If I could take 2 minutes per dial playing Fairship Rebels, I would never lose a game until the finals.
I was just thinking that.
Like, I mean, Nate, in our game, for instance, yeah. Like, I mean, in the middle of our game was when I made the conscious decision that I wasn't going to slow play my way to the final table.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, short story is we got the game to, it was a state where it was, I'd lost something and killed Miranda. I don't remember what I'd lost. It's not super important. But there were like 20 minutes left in the round or so, like 15 or 20. Mm-hmm. And if I'd taken 5 minutes a turn, I just win. Like, you don't have time to kill anything. But, mm-hmm. like, that's one against the tournament rules. Like, you can't deliberately slow play. And there's no way to prove that someone's slow playing you, but you know if you're slow playing someone. Like, if you've made your decision for what to do, you can't just sit there and, like, oh, I'll keep thinking about it.
So, yeah. so what you're saying, Chris, is you're talking about intent.
Yes, but that's a serious problem because we've seen slow play is entirely unenforceable because you can never know someone's intent.
Well, so, like, I mean, there are times that people deliberately try to do that. Recently, I went to a store championship and, like, this guy clearly was trying to slow play because he knew in one or two turns, it's kind of like chess where you know, hey, I'm going to win in two turns. The guy took at least 15 minutes to pick an action and I called him on it and the judge tried to call him on it and it still didn't do much, but you know,
So part of the problem is, so I do a lot of the judging for our local stuff and I'm not gonna, so FFG's precedent for slow play is don't do anything. So if I'm representing the store I'm working for, I can't throw someone out of a tournament for slow play because the first thing that's going to happen is it's going to show up on Reddit and now that store is going to look bad and they're going to get all these things like, well, why do you have your judges that go and break FFG's policy? Like, you know, they say it's fine. So why does your judge come in and say, oh, you got thrown out because he took 15 minutes to set his dial for his one hole decimator on the opposite side of the board to his opponent, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've repeatedly had that precedent of, you know, overwhelming leniency to the point where anytime a judge actually does something, there's a, you know, ridiculously negative backlash on the other end.
Yep, and that's probably some topics for another day, but definitely different, definitely interesting, you know, discussion points and some thoughts when looking at tournament results and thinking about how to approach a tournament. There's a lot of decision-making when it comes to dials and actions and all these things, and, you know, maybe we need some Zach Matthews-style floor rules, you know, everybody write it on their arms at Worlds or something, maybe it'll happen.
Don't cheat on stream.
Don't cheat on stream.
Cheat on Gold Squadron stream. It's the best. Only good things come out of it. You could be on Reddit. You could be famous. You could have memes made about you. It'll be great.
So I asked the question before, will we see more Corrin? Then the reaction is right, like, all right, so if Corrin is good, right, if people think, if that is the general idea, Corrin is good, then do we see a lot of Kylo at Nova? I'll show you the dark side, baby.
So there's Kylo has a problem. If you look at the top 16 lists at Gen Con and you say, okay, I'm only going to play against these all tournament, then you will do very well. Like, if you get my Gen Con Swiss polls during your tournament and you brought Kylo, you'll probably win the tournament. But you don't, that's not how that works. Like, there, you have to pass a sea and field of jank that is the middle tables of a major tournament to get to the actual, like, stuff you're expecting. Mm-hmm. And Kylo gets crushed by the field. Like, when someone rolls up with 3 B-Wings and then, like, a TLT and then like a Z, you're like, well, I lose. This is great.
So it's all dependent on that, like, that first round.
Yeah, that field jank. Like, you could, like, you know, when you're going to regionals, if this meta still looks like this, which it probably won't, and you've got a buy, and you're, you know, use that buy and jump into the meta. I know a lot of people did that where they ran, you know, Gunner Vader. They're like, all right, I'll use my buy and feast on Palpaces till the cut.
So last little bit here. So we have three players here who actually played at Gen Con. I didn't because I was broadcasting. What would you say was the most interesting or weird list that you played against? And if there wasn't anything interesting or weird, that's okay. But go ahead, let me know. Zach, we'll start with you.
Probably, I saw a lot of kind of interesting stuff on day one. I loved Ben Fowler's Mind Link with Captain Nim in it and Palab. Tom, I can't pronounce his last name, my top four opponent with the two PS1 Skurgs with TLT cruise missiles and a party bus. And then one other list I saw that was really interesting, I feel like, unfortunately, my opponent may have just gotten... The variants went very heavily in my favor, but it was Four-Ship Imperial with an Academy, Vader, Score to Settle Vessery, and Countdown. And it's like, that's a lot of ships that are good and do different things. But he jousted me, and that didn't go super well for him.
I didn't play anything that was actually too, like, different. I played a lot of meta stuff the entire time. A lot of bigs, a lot of, like, you know, aces. The only things that stand out to me are, what was it? It was Leander with his, where he did a little take on the Ghost build, but instead of bigs, he used Lorik, which I thought was interesting. And then I have to agree with Tom's build with the Cathark Pirates with, like, Twin Laser and that Slaver. I was really surprised that, you know, that did really, really well, so.
Oh, but actually, I'd be remiss, too, if I forgot to mention Paul Black had a really cool list, too, with Pava, Lorik, and Nora. I looked at that a lot. I just wasn't sure I could get the Miranda I wanted. I like Miranda much better than Nora, but Paul's list was awesome.
Yeah, I've got three, actually. So speaking of field jank, like round two, I think it was round two. I had such a long day, I barely remember. I played against like a 5-ship Rebel Swarm that had Shimmer, who's the A-Wing that gets extra dice at range one, and like a bunch of Zs and Jess Pava. Two Zs, Jess Pava, and Braylon with not stress Braylon, just Braylon built to do damage. And his plan was, just dive Jemmer into the middle of Fireship Rebel and then try to pick it apart from there. It didn't work, but it was still cool. And like those are the kind of lists that you have to look out for if you're bringing something like Racklow, where you might just see some weird field jank and lose, and then you're in the exit one bracket, and then you're never going to escape. But another good fun one I played, well, fun, I was impressed in the amount of agency burgling it did, was a Push the Limit Solstice Ixa, just kitted with bombs and experimental interface and like expertise Asajj, or Push the Limit Asajj, my bad. And man, he was barrel rolling, dropping bombs on me, and it was awful, but I plot armored my way through that game. Just roll blanks, it's fine. No, he one shot my Jess with a bomb, it was terrifying. But no, like honestly, the craziest and most impressive list that came out of Gen Con, I think, is just Nathan's. Yeah, I spend a lot of time trying to break the game, to be honest, like to figure out ways to do things that you are not intended to be able to do. And I think Nathan hit every single piece of the game that scares me and like things that are like, wow, that's really good, like Dangaroo style breaking the game. And I don't know if what made him go back to advanced sensors. I mean, Zach probably has the answer exactly. But I assume it's advanced sensors popping up on Nim, and it just kind of has reminded everyone that advanced sensors exists. And oh my God, Corrin Horn with advanced sensors is just pick him up and put him wherever you want. Regen a shield.
I can tell you a little bit on that. The first one was he actually messed around with it at the Ohio Regional, went undefeated in Swiss and lost to Marcel there. Shout out Marcel for making up something on the other side of the country to run away from Nathan when he's on a hot streak. but also, I mean, if you look at the meta, like when even I finally go, well, you know what? I'm not bringing stress in this meta. No one is bringing stress in this meta. there was some blocking around. You know, there was a little bit of the trip jumps. We expected to see it. We saw less of it than we did. But, you know, we've talked a lot about the Intel agent bumping. So, you know, push limit advanced sensors becomes really strong there because now you at least get your actions and, you know, maybe you can recoup some agency. But yeah, if nothing's throwing stress, the advanced sensors play is really strong.
And the funny thing is, like, I'm playing tactician, right? I'm playing stress, but if I catch Corrin once with tactician, he doesn't care. Okay, fine. I'll play fair for one turn, right? Whatever.
Yeah. He has a great dial, so you can get out of there, clear the stress, and continue.
Yeah, like, they'll be fine.
Yeah, I had played with Stress Hog instead of Biggs in my list for a while. And in Nathan and I's practice matchups, it was extremely one-sided in favor of me because I had to catch Corrin exactly once and I won the game with Stress Hog. And it was that simple.
Not so much now, because now he'll be double-stressed. Well, really, he'll just never be an arc ever, to be more accurate.
Yeah, well, and that was, I mean that list he took to Gen Con. If I caught Advanced Sensors Corrin once, that was the end of Corrin, because you didn't even have the fire control for the, you know, the bonus damage at that point. You couldn't, you know, hope to nuke something and then start getting out of there. It was just, you know, that the action you took last turn was the last action you get if Stress Hog catches you.
Hey everyone, I want to take a moment to talk to you about the Michigan GT. It's happening October 6th, 7th, and 8th. There's a Hangar Bay on Friday, the X-Wing Championship on Saturday, and an awesome narrative event on Sunday. The badge for the Michigan GT is only $10, and they even have a package if you want to do all of the X-Wing events that weekend. Go to michigangt.com for more information, and I hope to see you there.
One of the other exciting things that came out of Gen Con was the announcement of Wave 12. We all knew that something was going to get announced. We got three ships in the wave. Well, probably, right, we're probably going to end up getting some Last Jedi stuff announced sometime in September. But we got three ships spoiled. We will start with the Kimogila, a.k.a. Heavy Hutt Fighter. And Chris, you said you had some lore on that for us.
So after a couple Galaxies expansions, this is another Star Wars Galaxy ship. It was made as like a neutral ship because they were seriously lacking neutral ships. You know, that you could be Imperial or Rebel or neutral. They needed neutral ships. So that's where all like the Kirax and everything comes from, the Seek. These are all Galaxies neutral ships for like non-affiliated characters. But actually the Kimogila was like the terrible ship that no one ever really played, at least when I played. All it was good for was grinding XP because they could never turn around. So you could go with like a level one pilot and just roll up to like high tier ships. And you could just get behind them and eventually kill them and get like a whole bunch of like boatload of experience at once because they can never turn around. So I'm curious to see if the dial is like white one straight and then everything else is red.
And they said it in the description that it struggles to make hard turns, especially tight turns. So I would be surprised. I mean, in my head, that sounds like it means, you know, white 3-turn, red 2-turn, no 1-turn.
But it's a scum ship, so it's probably green 3-turn, white 2-turn, and then like one of the one turns is green and the other one's white.
So yeah, definitely some red turns in there. So let's look at these stats here. It has 3 attack, 1 agility, 6 hull, 2 shields, and we do have that new mechanic with the bullseye firing arc. So it says here on the reference card, it says when attacking, if the defender is inside of your bullseye's firing arc, the defender cannot spend focus tokens to modify defense dice or evade tokens to add evade results. So, not being able to use tokens is pretty good. So look at me, I'm Omega Leader now. Is that the idea?
That bullseye firing arc is really big. At least on the reference card, it looks like it looks huge. Template down in front of it. If that ship has barrel roll, if you take that PS10 pilot, I don't know that there's much of an escape from it. If they want to catch you with it, they'll catch you with it.
I like how you assume PS10 because VI is probably, yeah. if it is as big as it looks, that you staple VI to the guy.
Yeah, I mean, and if you can deny their modifiers, their ability to modify, you know, you don't need to modify your own dice as much, and it's got the illicit slot, so you can take glitter stim for that turn that really matters, and we don't know what the salvage astros are going to be.
Mm-hmm. So slots that it has a licit slot, a salvage astromech slot, like Zach mentioned, a missile slot, a torp slot, and an EPT is going to be on three of them. Actions are barrel roll, focus, target lock, and reload. Chris, what's reload?
Ships with the reload icon in their action bar may perform a reload action. To reload, choose any number of the ship's equipped upgrade. To reload, choose any number of the ship's equipped... That's not English. All right. Maybe I shouldn't have read it. Basically, you flip over all your torpedo and missile upgrades face up.
This thing can take long-range scanners.
Yes, it can.
So you long-range scanners, and there's your modifier.
I mean, will you, though? Because you can also take R4 Agromech. And R4 Agromech's pretty good.
Well, because you're going to be barrel rolling a lot, presumably, with the pilot skill 10. So you're not going to get your focus as often.
Well, I'm saying, like, you take a focus early, and then you get the target lock, and you keep it for the next one. You're right. You probably just long-range scanner, just one-shot things. That sounds better.
So that's that looks definitely interesting. Reload. I mean, one of the complaints about ordnance a lot is that once it's gone, it's gone. At least that was before the ordnance fix, aka Jumpmaster, came along. What was one of the complaints was you had to pay these points for a missile, a torpedo. You couldn't do it again. So here's an opportunity to do it again at the cost of an action. In the pack, it looks like we're getting some new cards. We got some two copies of a new illicit card, new salvage astromech labeled R5TK.
Oh my god!
AKA wrecked.
You're right.
So two things about wrecked that I noticed from the spread that I missed initially, is that we actually only see the point cost is zero. It's a super safe assumption that it's a salvage astromech, but isn't the slot actually covered in the spread?
Yeah, it is.
Like, I don't think FFG will, you know, do something crazy and make something that's clearly an astromech an illicit slot, but I also thought it was interesting. I don't think I've ever seen that where we know the point cost, but not, it doesn't show what slot it occupies.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so 0 points, we assume. We'll see what happens. We got scrambled egg missiles, two of those, and probably. What do you guys think? I'm probably thinking it has something to do with the jam effect.
Well, it only comes with 4 jam tokens, so I have no idea why you would think that.
Right.
But all right, so let's think here for a second though. There's two. They're scrambler missiles, right? What else would they be? It's like when you're watching Gundam and they shoot like 100 missiles out at once. That's what the art looks like. But like, there's two cards in there that say scram something missiles, like I assume scrambler missiles, and there's 4 tokens. Like, so does each one assign 2 jam tokens, or is it like an area thing, or how does that work?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. So as for those jam tokens, the reference card, hopefully this one's worded a little bit better, says when a ship has both a jam token and a focus, evade, or blue target lock token, remove the jam token, then that ship chooses and removes one of its focus, evade, or blue target lock tokens. A ship is jammed if it has a jam token. So it looks like we'll probably get some effects that says, like, if an enemy ship is jammed, you can do X, Y, and Z. So that's why it's explaining that it is like a kind of like a condition. You are jammed. And it sounds like the jam token sticks and doesn't come off until you choose to remove one of those focus evade tokens.
So it really looks like these ships are really action control, but you know, there's like a give and a take to this. One, you have to obviously spend your action if you're trying to do a jam to like mess them up, or maybe you have to spend like, you know, missiles or other things to make sure that happens, or you spend all this time like flying around to make sure you have them in arc so they can't do these things. So it feels like it's control, but you're giving up something to do that.
Well, honestly, the funny thing is what all this sounds like to me is like, man, this sounds really, really good against Dengaru. Like, if I could keep him from getting overclocked focus tokens and then he just never gets them because he's jammed, great.
Too bad they murdered that already.
The FFG product development lead time is so long that I wonder if this was made before they, like, planned to do any kind of FAQ. So this was the Dengaru fix, and then they hit the panic button and pushed out the FAQ for, like, Manaru and Zuckuss and everything even earlier because they're like, we can't wait to drop these ships.
Yeah. You know, not a crazy idea. Pilot-wise, We have a pilot skill 3, 5 has a PEPT. Pilot 7 is Dalen Oberos, who, again, yeah, he's also from the new Star Viper that hasn't been released yet, or from Guns for Hire. And then we have Tarani Kulda. And what's his ability there, Nate?
After you perform an attack, each enemy ship inside your bullseye firing arc at range 1 to 3 must choose to suffer 1 damage or remove all of its focus and evade tokens. So, that's very interesting.
Yeah, so I talked about this before, and I can't believe I blanked because it's a reference to my favorite novel. Is they're catch 20, it's a catch 22 card. Your opponent decides which way they're getting hosed. I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I like it.
Funny because, like, here, Ben, you know what was good about a year ago was Soontir Fell, and if this was around at Soontir's time, like PS10 small base ship with barrel roll that could auto damage or make you discard all your tokens at PS10, he would have been in trouble.
Alrighty, so that is the Kimogila, and then next one we have the Phantom 2. So if you guys don't watch Rebels, you probably were really confused, like, why do we need another Phantom? Like, why a whole other pack for this? In the show, their original Phantom gets destroyed or, like, abandoned on a planet. Some, one of those two things. And they end up stealing a Clone Wars era Centipede class ship, whatever the heck it's called. And
Stealthipede.
And then Sabine, in her very sassy way, says, "This thing needs a paint job," and paints it up how we see it there. To attack.
Wait,
two.
They missed an opportunity to make the Sabine something?
They did.
FG is slacking.
I know. So it has a 2 attack, 2 agility, 4 hull, 1 shield. So big difference you'll notice there is that it has has 2 attack instead of 3 from the original shuttle, but it trades that third dice for a rear arc. It has a crew and an astromech slot. Actions are target lock, focus, and I think the one that's really going to make a difference and where we will see this maybe played without a ghost is the coordinate action. So, Chris, is coordinate good?
I'm tired. I'm terrified. I am terrified of the Sheath of Bead. I am, like, so we haven't gone over the pricing or anything yet, but it looks like you can get a cheap one for, like, 15 points or maybe even cheaper. And I am willing to bet a lot of money that you can make some combo wing list gone out of control with one or two of these. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure how to get there, but
you almost absolutely need to bring bigs unless there's some sort of way to de-escalate the red dice in the meta.
But that leaves you 60 points to bring some ship that you can give actions to with Intel Agent, you know, that type of thing.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you can, you know, go the cheap way, or like we talked about it a little bit, is Fenrau with VI is PS11 for 21 points. So you coordinate at PS11. Like, you and I found ways to make Kylo ridiculously abusive coordinating at PS6 or PS8, or even with I'm forgetting long range guy's name right now, Major Striden at 4. Like, to do it at 11, like, yeah, sure, I've seen where everything is. Now I'll do this.
I mean, I'm range one of bigs anyway, so I don't really need my action. I'm a 2-die ship. Like, who cares about my dice mods?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a better platform than Ahsoka was, and Ahsoka was obviously very successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, coordinates, very good action. Very good action. That's right there, like you guys said already. That's the spot where people are going to try to break it. Upgrades wise, we see in the pack there, it looks like we're getting a chopper astromech. We're getting a new generic astromech that says something along the lines of, after executing a maneuver, if you did not overlap a ship or obstacle, and then something about a barrel roll. So we'll see what that is. We got some generic crew, and I'm pretty sure, what do you guys think? Is that a Darth Maul crew? Maul?
That is definitely Darth Maul.
Can you imagine?
It's a scum only.
Go ahead, Chris.
What card would that be that isn't Darth Maul? Like, it's a red guy with a hood on and, like, a tattooed arm, and his name starts with an M or an N.
It says scum only. It's coming in a
Rebel pack.
We're in a rebel pack, so I mean, if there, but there's like other instructions after it says like scum only, and then like more stuff there.
Yeah, it's got a lot of italics in the or a lot of text in the what you can equip it to area. Yeah.
Maybe something like scum only unless equipped to a Sheetipede class thing. I mean, I don't know if they would be that specific.
Yeah. Or more likely Ezra thematically, like.
Yeah, yeah, that works. So looking at the text, it kind of looks, sounds like an offensive Zuckuss. And if you get a hit, so like taking stress, like if you're not stressed, taking stress tokens to reroll offensive dice. And if you hit, you get something. That's kind of what I parsed from the little letters that are sticking out from there. Maybe like if you hit, you actually get to like remove some of the stress tokens or something.
Well, I mean, there's two thoughts on this. So the first is... you know, the only thing you probably get if you hit is you get your like Jedi Master blinded. But two, it's a pretty cool like little idea they've got going on here. I mean, scum only unless you have some weird condition. Like, it's good that they're blurring the lines between scum and rebels so we can very quickly categorize all the terrorists in the game.
There you go. Can't see me shaking my head, unfortunately.
So we're getting a new ghost title that says equip the Phantom 2 title card to a friendly Sheetipede class shuttle and dock it to this ship. After you execute a maneuver, you may deploy it from its rear guide. So just saying like, hey, you can get the new shuttle there. And then the Phantom 2 title gives it its new ability. It says when you are docked, the ghost can perform primary weapons attack from a special firing arc. So you can shoot off the butt with your normal gun. And then it says, while you are docked, at the end of the activation phase, the ghost may perform a free coordinate action. So more coordinate shenanigans to do. But then again, like we were kind of talking about using just the Sheetipede's normal coordinate action. I wonder if, like, do I want to spend all those points to get this Phantom 2 title involved on a ghost when I might be able to just use it at a, like you said, the Fenrao pilot. Unless there's some type of crazy combo wing thing we discover when we kind of start taking a look at it.
Well, I have a list builder and, all right. So Corrin Horn is 48 points and a ghost base is 35. If that cheapest one is actually like 14 points ish, 14, 15, maybe even 13, mm-hmm. You can throw that on a ghost and have 4 points for auto blaster fire control on your ghost. And now you've got PS Infinity, Push the Limit, Fire Control, R2-D2, Engine, Corrin with Ashoka, but Ashoka now has 16 health, an Auto Blaster, and a 4.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. The main reason, I assume, would be to really protect it and also to abuse that ghost chassis.
Like, coordinate at the beginning or at the end of the activation phase is insane. I mean, not like they're crazy, but, like, incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I mean, and... just to go back to, like, if you look at one of the first people I remember really doing stuff like this well was your Lupin Chewy Continental Champion, Zatch Bart, with Jake Kyle Poe, where his whole list was unblockable, and then he would take actions during the combat phase. There's definitely some cheaper alternatives to Corrin out there in the Rebel arsenal that I'm sure people will figure out. Jake is really one of the ones that comes to mind, because then you can take PTL intensity without just being wrong by not having him at 9.
Yeah, that's all good stuff. So looking forward to see what kind of, especially like you guys said, the pricing of the Sheetipede will determine what you can get in there and make some shenanigans. So pilots, we have the PS1, which I'm assuming is AP5. He's one of the characters on Rebels. We're getting Zeb with the same ability. You can see the text. It's formatted the same way.
AP5 is the inventory droid, right?
Yep.
That's so sad we're not getting K2.
How would you not? AP5 is like the best character of Rebels. Mary was so excited when she thought that he died. Spoiler alert.
PS5, we're sitting with Ezra. Looks like some type of ability that as long as he's stressed, he gets some type of benefit. But it looks like the formatting is different. So instead of maybe when defending, it might be like when defending and attacking, or attacking instead, something.
It is 2 again, which is interesting. Or I guess his ability isn't 2 now. It's just you can change your focus to evades. He just happens to have 2 agility.
Yeah.
No, I think it actually said 2 on old Ezra, because I I believe I rolled 3 eyeballs playtesting. I'm going to Google this now. Yep, it's 2 on the attack shuttle.
Yeah.
There you go. So you can do 2 somethings to it. We'll see what we get there. And then PS9, we're sitting with Fen Rao. He's 20 points. Not the same ability. I'm sure somebody got excited there. Not the same ability as his scum ship. It says, when an enemy ship inside your firing arc at range 1 to 3 becomes the active ship during the combat phase, if you're not stressed, you may receive 1 stress token. If you do that, that ship cannot spend tokens to modify its dice when attacking this round. It says, oh, you know all those focus and target locks and all the things that you spent points for, you can't use them.
You know what this means. Marksmanship, new meta.
There you go.
I say, this is the, oh, I wandered into his arc and it's so overpowered ship.
Well, it does have a rear and a front arc. That's a very significant portion of the board.
It is.
Valid.
But you know what it doesn't protect against? Expertise.
Yep.
It also doesn't protect against, what's it called, Glitter Sim. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of mods that aren't tokens. Or Palpatine, he's back, baby.
There you go.
Doesn't Predator... No, Predator does not get around. Yeah, Predator gets around it, too.
Yep.
The only tokens are focus target lock, so...
Yep. So, but those are the most common ones, right? So it'll hose mm-hmm. some of those just generic things that... Or especially... I guess it actually does work really well against generics that the only thing they have is focus and target lock, you know?
Yeah, and there's a lot of generics in the meta right now.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, there are a lot of lists that pilot ability is blank against.
Yep. So we'll see how much he gets used. I think he might be a coordinate chassis, if anything. We'll have to wait and see. Especially sitting at 20 points, it's not too bad.
Yeah, my gut tells me that ability is extra. It's a bonus if it works.
Now we've gotten to the Golden Child, guys.
Wait, can I do it? Can I do the transition?
Do it.
For so long, we've all been waiting. We've been waiting for so long for one thing in X-Wing, and that is, what ship will Captain Bosch von Ronsenberg of Dalmasca fly?
Don't believe in Andor's lies.
Bosch lives. All right, assault gunboat! Assault gunboat! It's here.
Now that we've gotten what we wanted, we got it spoiled, right? We'll have it probably, they said quarter 4. So
February. You can,
yeah, February. Santa might bring you one of these in your stocking if the boat's on time. What are we going to be clamoring for next?
X-Wing fix.
X-Wings.
Where's my Rebel Aces pack? Is that the next thing?
Yeah, but actually, so what Chris mentioned earlier about like unique upgrade cards that are like ship specific, I think that would be a fantastic way to fix the X-Wing in a really cool way, is to make like a Wedge Antilles only title, a Skywalker only title,
that could be cool, yeah.
Morgan's only title, and then you just skip the big title. And then you don't have to do weird stuff like, you may not equip this card if your pilot skill is 5, but you can equip it if you're hobby, right? Like, you don't have to make that, like, weird Biggs loophole.
Yeah, because we are all scared of anyone doing anything X-Wings, because whatever you do to X-Wings may affect Biggs.
All right, boys. Assault Gumbo. I'm sure at least one person listening is like, thank God. Somebody's steering the train.
All of them are like, thank God.
So, attack 2. So, guys, wait a second. I know there's a couple people who are pissed off. Like, really? What does 2 dice do? This thing was not about primary weapons. It's about secondary weapons. We'll get to that in a minute. But, yes, primary 2, it's okay. Agility 2, hole 4, shields are 3. Slots are missile and torpedo. And some of them have EBTs. Actions are target lock, focus, slam... Which is probably, like, in hindsight, why the... well, Miranda's broken as hell, right? We can see...
Fair and balanced.
Well, I guess advanced slam is bad.
Dumb and unnecessary.
There you go. So, the whole Reddit fact thing got leaked and it has been confirmed, right? At least that part where we see the wording exactly what the Reddit fact said. So... looks like that's coming. And
I can't believe that happened. So, like, FFG, let's talk for a second. So if you're having people leak things, you don't go and publish a preview with a card of the thing that you're concerned about people leaking. Like, get the render of your old card, guys. Come on.
Like, you have that somewhere.
Upgrades in the Assault Gunboat. We are getting the XG1 Assault Configuration. It's a one-point title. It says you gain not one, but two cannon slots. You may perform attacks with cannon secondary weapons that cost two or fewer squad points, even when you have a weapons disabled token. So right now, that is Flechette Cannon, which is obviously OP, and Tractor Beam, and Artcaster, right? That's the three we have released.
And they can't take Artcaster.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's Rebel
and Skull only.
Ah, so that's why. That's why they did that. Got it. There you go. So we had the Gumbo preview way before. So no Artcaster. But we are, looks like we're getting some other cannons in the pack. We have something that looks like it's probably jamming beam. And like linked batteries. So I actually opened up this Google Doc to the public, and somebody threw those full names in there. I don't know who put them in there, but let it be known. It looks like somebody guessed, quote-unquote guessed, jamming beam and linked batteries and gave full wording here. So I don't know if this is spoiling anything.
Man, I'm going to laugh when someone on Reddit just bamboozled you.
And yeah, that'd be hilarious.
Kind of accurate. Like, it doesn't even match the picture.
So jamming beam is probably going to be a very similar to tractor beam, probably cost like a point. Well,
so maybe. It says here, jamming beam, if this attack hits, assign a defender a jam token, then cancel all dice results. That seems to make pretty decent sense with the words you can see there. Linked batteries, small ship only, when performing a primary attack, cannon secondary weapons may resolve their effects. I don't know what that means, but...
Wait, really? They pieced that together from this picture?
That's what they got.
I'm alarmed.
My guess looking at it is like the card that people theory crafted forever is you shoot your cannon, you don't cancel dice results.
Ah.
Like that would be my guess. And then it would word it in a way that's poorly worded and confusing.
And we're getting another title card, the OS-1. We don't know what that is yet. We get some unknown EPT that you see, like a TIE fighter blowing up. That also comes in the Kimogila. The Advanced Slam with the Reddit fact wording and a cruise missile. Getting some generic pilots, Lieutenant something, Lieutenant Carr, blah, 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 at PS5. And Major
Vindar.
26 points, and it says, when defending, if you have a weapons disabled token, roll one additional defense dice. So, you slam jam out of somewhere, have some extra defense, and bring it back around town to reload or something. I don't know. At least that's the idea. What do you guys think? Is that going to be good?
I think it's going to be perfectly balanced. I think it's going to be fun.
Well, so that's not good.
No. Yeah, so that was a no. The long answer to that question is, can you consistently set up alpha strikes where you put advanced slam on these, you roll up, you shoot off your like three munitions or whatever, and then the next turn you slam out and you reload and then you turn around to do it again? Like, if you can consistently do that, then these are going to be amazing.
Yeah, it depends on that dial, right? We have the only thing we could see right now is a three white bank, but if they can get some fast moves in order to generate some space and they have a decent K turn, this is going to be, it can get scary fast.
Yeah. I mean, when you can go like, four straight, slam 4K or something like that is very strong.
You can coordinate. Here we go. Coordinate the reload from some other ship and then do the 4K.
That way. Or you could even have more fun. You can, like four straight, if it has a four straight, advanced slam or slam, do your advanced slam action and then push the limit, reload.
There you go. If they have some decent greens, because the row squadron pilot looks like it might have an EPT.
Oh man, I'm excited. 20 says he. So if we start at 26 points, what are we thinking? Is the Cascade 2 points or 3 points?
I mean, their standard would be the cheapest is 21, but I'm willing to bet it's 22 because no balls. No, if they make it 21, that title's not... Oh, the title does cost 1 point. I was going to say I can put the tractor beam and the cannon title and cruise missiles on them. They probably don't want me to take four of those.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it wouldn't fit anyway, so it's super irrelevant. There's no way it's 20 points.
These things are... They're pretty cheap for having, like, 7 hit points and, you know, like, all these, like, EPTs and Pine Skull 7.
Well, so four hull, three shields is about an X-Wing durability.
Yeah,
I mean, it basically like is because you're taking integrated.
Yeah, I mean, integrated is like a shield and three quarters. So it's almost identical to an X-Wing stat line.
There you go. So Wave 12 coming to our home sometime in the winter. Or I guess if you live on the Southern Hemisphere, it's not winter. But whatever, you know what I mean. December, January, February.
Still winter. Get good Southern Hemisphere.
There you go.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
I want to thank everybody for listening today. You can watch our live broadcasts at twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast. You can watch our video replays of our North American Championships at youtube.com/C/GoldSquadronPodcast. Honestly, it's probably just easier just to search our name in the YouTube search bar. All of the matches should be up by the time you're listening to this. And lastly, if you enjoy the show and want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron. Nate, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Zach, thank you so much for joining us today.
Crates on top.
Yeah, man. Second in the on the continent. How's that feel?
I mean, the second part's starting to sink in a little more, but it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. You know what though? You even said it yourself. You said it a couple times when we were chatting. It's like, you probably wouldn't, if there's anybody in the world that you would be like, okay to losing to, it's probably Nathan.
Yeah. I mean, I did realize me and him been joking all season. Cause I've never been second in an X-Wing event before. And then I've been second to Nathan three times now in the past, like, month and a half.
So did he... I think what happened is that he cast some kind of curse on you, Game of Thrones style.
Like, you got the Bridemaid's curse.
There's one event that I've been at where I have, you know, not been second. But we just finished our story league, and he was first, I was second. We had that store champ, which admittedly I was totally disengaged on the final table. Because I knew I had to change the list I wound up running. And then, yeah, North American, like, I don't know. I don't think it, I was told by other members of the Bridesmaids Club I have to lose to Paul Heaver on a final table to really be a bridesmaid. So I'm calling you out, Paul.
There you go. Come get me.
That's never backfired before. But yeah, no, man, it's a pretty awesome feeling. It's definitely really cool. And I made it to Tim's Holy Rankings.
Yeah, you did. And Chris, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I gotta give a shout out as well. Thank you, Jeremy Chambly, for giving us a great robot impersonation, even though you couldn't make it.
Yes.
Quite beautiful. And also thanks to everybody that helped contribute to the glorious and fantastic and super successful Crate Gen Con run. You all know who you are. I'm not going to bother calling you all out. We're the best. Get good, everyone else.
So, and you know, I have to put this out there. Like, you were very adamant at asking me how many Gold Squadron podcast hosts were in the top 16. Now, this is where the fighting words come, because we're gonna be at Nova. Marcel and I will be playing at Nova. So that's where the real fight happens.
Yeah, but nobody cares about Nova.
Okay, so you're telling me that if I win the national championship, you're just gonna be like, get good, you didn't win Gen Con? Is that what you're going to tell me?
That does sound like us, to be fair.
I will reverse my stance about Canada and Mexico watering North America down. You know, the more I thought about it, like, Mexico's got some really strong players. So I do have to respect Mexico.
Canada, like, all they do is fly Kanan off the board, so I don't know.
Right? Oh, Eric, sorry.
By the way, I'm not going through an entire podcast without shouting out Alex Mogensen.
And, like, I'm going to Nova just to, like, prove a moral point. So I don't know that I care about my Nova run. I'm sorry. I'm throwing away the tournament so we can't compete.
You're taking away my agency to take away your agency?
Yep.
Yep. I mean, I won't be at Nova unless someone wants to pay for my plane ticket at the last possible minute here.
What do plane tickets cost? Do they cost about as much as templates?
I don't know. They might. I mean, I'm leaning towards... I can probably make the spacing for Canadian work. Plus, I think it would be hilarious to put me in the same room as real Canadians.
That sounds quite entertaining.
All righty. Thank you for listening, everybody. My name is Dio Morales. Actually, wait. I'm not supposed to... See, when I have guests, I've been trying to be nice and let them do it. Who wants to do it?
Great on top.
You got to say Gold Squadron out. That's how we end it.
Oh, Gold Squadron out, too. Those guys are invited, too.
Gold Squadron out.
We didn't do Ron's favorite part.